Pull out one of your old cross-country nav logs sometime. The real one from training. The one with the coffee ring on it and your handwriting getting messier the further down the page you go. Look at the time off column. I'll bet you money the first leg was dead on, and I'll bet the time started drifting after that. Yours did, mine sure did. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot, one flight at a time. Today, I want to talk about the single most useful thing you can do on a VFR cross-country, and it happens about 10 minutes after takeoff. It's the first checkpoint ground speed check. It's the moment you find out whether the flight plan you built at the kitchen table has anything to do with the airplane you're actually flying. Let's walk through this together. Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. Your first real cross-country, the one where you land somewhere far enough that you have to buy fuel and figure out the self-serve pump, that's a milestone too. Great way to mark the moments that matter. AviationSoul.com, okay. Dead reckoning. Here's the thing, nobody tells you plainly when you're a student. Your flight plan is a prediction, that's all it is. You sat down the night before with a sectional, a plotter, a flight computer, and the forecast winds aloft, and you predicted the future. You said, I will be going 110 knots over the ground, and I will cross this little town at 14 minutes and 30 seconds after I level off. And here's the part that gets people. That prediction was built on forecast winds. Not real winds, forecast. Somebody at the Aviation Weather Center made their own prediction about the wind at 6,000 feet over your route. Hours before you ever showed up at the airport, and you built your entire nav log on top of their guess. So you've got a prediction, stacked on a prediction, and you launch anyway. That's not a criticism. That is flying. That is how cross-country navigation has worked since before Lindbergh. You make the best plan you can, and then you go up and find out how wrong it is, and you fix it in the air. The fixing is the skill. The planning is just the starting point. So let's talk about the two tools underneath all of this, because I want to make sure we're using the words right. Pilotage is navigating by looking out the window. You see a lake, you find the lake on the chart, you know where you are. Little kids do pilotage. It's the most natural thing in the world. Dead reckoning is the other one, and it's the one that separates a pilot from a passenger. Dead reckoning is navigating by heading, speed, and time. You point the airplane on a computed heading, you hold a known airspeed, you start a clock, and you calculate where you must be even when you can't see a single useful landmark. Haze. Unfamiliar terrain, a stretch of Nebraska, where every intersection looks like the last one. Dead reckoning still works when pilotage runs out, by the way. The term has nothing to do with anybody being dead. Best anyone can tell it's dead reckoning, short for deduced. You deduce your position. Dead reckoning. The morbid spelling just stuck around because pilots think it sounds cool. And honestly, it kind of does. Now here's where the two come together, and this is the whole segment right here. You use dead reckoning to make the prediction. You use pilotage to check it. And the checking happens at your first checkpoint. Let's set the scene. You've picked a good first checkpoint. We'll come back to what makes a checkpoint good, because that matters a lot. You've leveled off at your cruise altitude. You've set cruise power. You've leaned the mixture, and you've noted the exact time you crossed your departure fix or your first real waypoint. Write it down, not in your head. On the log, on the tablet, somewhere you can subtract from later. Then you fly. And you watch for that checkpoint out the window. The moment it slides under your wing, you note the time again, and now you do the one piece of arithmetic that makes you a real navigator. Time between checkpoints. Distance between checkpoints. Distance divided by time gives you ground speed. Your actual ground speed, the one the airplane is really making today, in these real winds, at this real weight, with this real power setting. Not the forecast, the truth. Let me make it concrete. Because numbers in the abstract just slide right off. Say your first checkpoint is 15 nautical miles from where you started your timing. You plan for a ground speed of 120 knots. At 120 knots, 15 miles should take you 7.5 minutes. You look down, it took 9 minutes. Stop, that's the whole game right there. 9 minutes instead of 7.5. You're slower than you planned. 15 miles in 9 minutes works out to right about 100 knots over the ground, not 120. The wind is not doing what the forecast promised. You've got 20 knots of headwind you didn't plan for. Now here's the trap, and I fell into it as a student, so let me save you the trouble. The temptation is to shrug and think, well, it's just one checkpoint, I'll average out. No, you will not average out. A 20-knot error on the first leg is a 20-knot error on every leg going that direction. It compounds, every checkpoint after this one will come later than you planned, and the gap gets wider the whole way, and your fuel burn, which you also planned around ground speed, is now wrong in the direction that hurts. So you don't shrug, you rewrite the plan. In the air, right now. Here's the practical part. You've got your real ground speed 100 knots, take the distance remaining to your next checkpoint, or all the way to your destination, and recompute the time using 100, not 120. On a flight computer, that's 10 seconds of work. On the little wheel side of your E6B, or on the app, doesn't matter. Set ground speed, re-time for distance. Now your ETAs down the rest of the log are honest, and then the big one, fuel. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Your fuel reserve isn't protected by the number on the fuel gauge. It's protected by whether your ground speed assumption is still true. If you plan to reach your destination burning a certain number of gallons, and you're now moving 20% slower over the ground, you're spending 20% more time in the air to cover that same ground, and you're burning fuel the entire time. The airplane doesn't care that you're going slower, it burns by the clock, not by the mile. So when that first checkpoint tells you you're slow, the very next question is not will I be late, it's will I still land with my reserves intact? That is the question that keeps you alive. The Federal Aviation Regulations, in 91.151, want 30 minutes of reserve for day VFR and 45 at night. And those are legal minimums, not targets. Your personal reserve should be fatter than that, and the first checkpoint is where you find out early, while you still have every option in the world, whether today's winds are quietly eating into it. That's the beauty of doing this 10 minutes into the flight instead of 90. You have options. You can pick a closer alternate, you can add a fuel stop, you can turn around. All of those are easy decisions when you're 10 miles out and have full tanks. All of them are terrible decisions when you're an hour and a half in. Wondering if the next airport with fuel is reachable? The check itself is trivial. The timing of the check is everything. Let me pause on that, because this is the difference between flying scared and flying ahead of the airplane. A pilot who does the ground speed check is never surprised by their fuel state. They knew 20 minutes ago it was going to be tight, because the math told them, and they already did something about it. Nothing about the flight got worse. They just found out early. That is what staying ahead of the airplane actually looks like in practice. It's not a mystical thing. It's subtraction and division at the first checkpoint. Now let's back up, because I promised we'd talk about what makes a checkpoint worth using, and this is where a lot of good plans fall apart before the airplane even moves. A good checkpoint has three qualities. First, it's unique. This is the big one. You want something that can only be the thing you think it is, a single tower out in a field, a dam, a bend in a river where two rivers actually join, the place a railroad crosses a highway at an angle, a town with a distinctive shape or a big grain elevator on the north side. What you do not want is one of four identical little towns in a row or a road intersection in a part of the country where every road intersects at a right angle every mile. If you can't tell it apart from its neighbors from 3 miles out, it's not a checkpoint, it's a coin flip. Second, it's ahead of you and off to the side a little, not directly under the nose. Anything directly beneath you disappears under the cowling right when you need it. Something you can watch approach out the windshield and slide past your wingtip gives you time to confirm it, time to catch the time, and time to think. Third, it works from altitude. That gorgeous little pond that shows up so clearly on the sectional might be completely invisible under summer haze from 6,000 feet, or dried up entirely in August. Roads, rivers, ridgelines, and towers read well from up high. Small ponds and individual buildings often don't. Pick features with size and contrast. And here's a tip that turns a good checkpoint into a great one. Pick your first checkpoint a little farther out than feels natural. Not 2 miles off the departure end. Give yourself 10, 12, 15 miles. You need enough distance for the ground speed math to mean something. If your checkpoint is 3 miles away and you're off by a few seconds on your stopwatch, that few seconds turns into a huge phantom error in the ground speed because you're dividing a tiny distance by a tiny time and the errors blow up. Over 15 miles, a couple seconds of sloppy timing barely moves the answer. Longer legs give you cleaner numbers. That's just how the arithmetic works. Which brings me to a quiet truth about the private pilot check ride, since a lot of you are pointed at that. The Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, has an entire area of operation for cross-country flight planning and navigation, and it splits it exactly the way we've been talking about. There's pilotage and dead reckoning, and there's navigation systems, the radios and the GPS, and in the pilotage and dead reckoning task, the standard is not get there. The standard is that you can identify landmarks, that you can navigate by dead reckoning, that you can verify your position, and, this is the phrase that matters, that you can correct for and record differences between your pre-flight ground speed and heading calculations and the actual values you find in flight. Read that again. The examiner is looking for you to correct for and record the difference between what you planned and what's really happening. They are quite literally looking for the ground speed check. Not whether you nailed the forecast, because nobody nails the forecast. They want to watch you catch the error and fix it. A student who crosses the first checkpoint notes it's 2 minutes late, quietly recomputes the ground speed, and revises the rest of the log. That student just showed the examiner the exact skill the ACS is built around. Without saying a word, that's a pass right there. And I'll tell you the failure mode too, because it's just as instructive. The student who has the magenta line on the GPS locked in, who's staring at the screen, who has the direct distance and the moving map and doesn't look outside once, that student can absolutely find the airport. But ask them what their ground speed is doing versus plan, ask them to divert with the screen dark, and it falls apart because they never learned to check the prediction against the world. The GPS is a wonderful tool. It is not a substitute for knowing whether your plan is true. Do the check even when the box is working, especially then. Because the day the box quits, the day you lose the GPS over unfamiliar ground, the pilot who's been quietly running the ground speed check, every leg already knows their heading is good, already knows their real speed, already has a clock running and a plan on paper, they just keep flying. Dead reckoning, the old way, carries them home. The pilot who outsourced all of it to the magenta line is suddenly very alone up there. So here's what I want you to take to your next flight. It's simple. Pick a good first checkpoint the night before, unique, off to the side, big enough to see from altitude and far enough out to give you clean numbers. Note your time when you start the leg. Note your time when you cross it. Do the division. Get your real ground speed, and then have the discipline to actually rewrite the rest of the plan around that number ETAs and fuel both, instead of hoping it averages out. 10 minutes into the flight, you'll know the truth about today's winds, and you'll have every option still open to deal with it. That's the difference between a pilot who plans a flight and a pilot who flies the flight they actually got. The regulation figures today come straight from the FARS, Part 91, and the check ride language is right there in the FAA's Airman Certification Standards, which you can and should download for free and read for yourself. If you want the Navlog templates and a few more notes on picking checkpoints, they're over at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Go pick a good checkpoint, and I'll see you out in the traffic pattern.